We make sure nobody's on more than three customers at a time, that they've got a balance between the ones that we know are pretty good and the ones that are a little harder. And you figure that out. But if somebody's overperforming, I don't want to give them more work. I want to give them different work. And I want to pay them more because they're making more impact.
This is Taking the Lead, a podcast for B2B tech professionals, leaders, and executives who want to learn from female icons in the tech industry. In each episode, host Christina Brady interviews women who are driving revenue for some of the most respected tech companies in the world. Are you ready to get inspired?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Taking the Lead. I am Christina Brady. I am your host. And I want to kick it off today by thanking our incredible partner, Women in Sales. If you don't know Women in Sales, they are focused on elevating, empowering, and promoting women within the sales profession. And in order to realize this vision and create more equitable sales teams in the future, they recognize that everyone needs to be a part of the conversation, and it is not specific to gender, and everyone needs to contribute toward the progress and those goals. And through facilitating conversations and sharing resources that are focused on enabling sales professionals, Women in Sales believe that they can help mold the future of sales to be more inclusive. And if you want to get involved in this incredible organization, head over to www.women-in-sales.com and you can join in on the conversation on Slack. And speaking of incredible women paving the way, I have my dear friend, Jen, on the episode today. Jen, welcome.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me. I like your podcast voice. I know you're real, you're like hanging voice. I like your podcast voice.
Yeah, I bring a little lower. I get a little closer to the mic. It's going to wear off.
It's very sultry.
Yeah, my throat voice is more grating. Yeah, and this, I try to get a little, you know, you get in, and I can tell if you can't tell already, Jen is a fellow thespian. We are both into improv. She is an artist. She's also the CEO of Go Nimbly. Jen, tell us your incredible background, how you got to where you are. Tell us the tale. Inspire us.
Thank you. Oh my gosh. Okay. So yes, I run Go Nimbly. That's my day job. And it's not the only thing about me. I think it's very important to be well-rounded and learn from a lot of different places. So Go Nimbly, I'm super proud, not just because we're doing work with like some of the most innovative SaaS companies. Big clients are Twilio, Intercom, Watershed, Zendesk. Like, so lucky to be surrounded by these incredible operators and incredible companies. And I'm just proud of the fact also that we're creating a place, like one of our ethos is to build a company where you're treated like adults. That actually is the thing that like keeps me going, because people are happy to work at our company and they are treated fairly and like adults, like I said. On the side, I also have a game company called Pillbox Games, and we make physical board games. So it is also very silly to run a company that, like, I don't know, I'm pitching projects starting at $20,000. And then I'm also selling a $25 game. So it's kind of crazy.
It's amazing. So one of the things that I think is so neat is, one, you didn't go into Go Nimbly as the CEO. You assented into that position. And I want to drill into that. But also, everybody that I talk to that is a CEO of a tech company or a services company that is serving other tech companies, it's, I'm the CEO of the organization and it's immersive. It's all hands-on. Yeah. I have no time for anything else. And I just heard you talk about what sounds like a very, very different way of balancing and hitting on multiple things that you love. And so to kick it off, talk a little bit about how you split your time and why it actually is okay to have passions outside of just being an immersive all-in CEO
totally.
In tech.
Oh, man. Okay. So, you know, all those posts that you see on LinkedIn about people or TikTok, that's like, I wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning and I exercise and I do all this and I journal. I roll out of bed at 9:01 for my meeting. Like, I have to crawl out of bed. I am not a morning person. That is not where I'm at my best. I'm so happy that most of my customers and, you know, we've got a lot of West Coast. So it allows me like to get away with it. But I've just, that isn't me. I am a night owl. I get a lot of my work done at the hours that work for me. I am not someone that like believes I have to fill, you know, every minute. That said, I am like, I can't sit still. I get it from my mom. So like, I'm never just like sitting watching a movie. I'm doing a little project. I'm doing crafts. I'm thinking about the business. And so for me, that variety kind of keeps me going. I also believe that having side hustles, or honestly, like, it's so silly. We kind of get mad as business owners at like the side hustle, but right. I don't have kids. So you do. And you spend a lot of time with your kid and you learn from your kid. And that's a whole project. Well, I've got my projects. And so I think that that's something that a lot of leaders will actually fixate on. Oh, you've got a side hustle. That's not good. You don't want that. You want people really focused on your business. I bring ideas from the stuff that I do. I bring ideas from the improv that I do back to the business, or I bring ideas from marketing a dumb, you know, game to people that I can bring back and say, hey, we need to talk to our consumers like we do B2C. So I just think you make time for the things that are important to you. There are days that are marathon days for me. There are deployment days that my team that I want to be supportive that we're up late. And there are days when I can be more creative and get that out in other places. My role at GoNimbly is very operational, where my role in these other companies is more creative. And I think that that balance works for me.
I think it's also an incredible balance to hear somebody who is in operations and does have an operator's mindset, but mm-hmm. that also leverages and leans into creativity so heavily. I firmly believe those two things go very, very hand in hand. Did you always have the mindset of sort of these, we'll just keep calling them side mm-hmm. hustles, make you stronger? Because that's ultimately what I heard, is that having a more well-rounded life outside of your core 9-to-5 or W-2, it can actually make you
totally
a better professional or better at that job. And that, sadly, and I agree with you, but I think sadly that's almost the exception. Because to your point, most people are like, no, they can't be distracted, can't do side hustles, can't do it. Have you always had the belief that that actually makes people stronger, or did you have to grow into that?
I think I had to grow into it a little bit. In consulting, there's a big thing around non-competes, right? Mm. So you're not supposed to be competing or doing any hourly work, you know, with anyone. We're a little less strict. We don't want you having a customer that could be our customer and you're just basically undercutting us because we give you all the training and access to everything. But if you are doing nonprofit work or an industry we don't serve, et cetera, who am I to stop you? As long as you're getting your work done, your customers are happy, you're hitting your goals, I am not going to stop you from gaining more wealth. I think it's important. I think it's better for you to differentiate. Like, we've all learned that in school, is to, you know, not have all your income and everything in one basket. If you can start doing that, by all means, and I want to help people do that. I've helped, you know, some of our employees. I've actually given them work at my, you know, game company from time to time. So I think I've always sort of had a little bit of like a belief that it was unfair, but I wasn't sure why. Like, at past companies I've worked in that had these like really insane non-competes, I remember, and I love my ex, you know, or my Blue Wolf alum, but I remember when I left, they gave me a non-compete, right? Like, they reminded me of my non-compete, and it said I couldn't do any tech consulting at all for a year.
It's a broad stroke.
And I was like, what if I started like a clip art consulting company where I teach people how to, you know, use, I don't know, a Microsoft Word and what? And they were like, nope, that's a no. And I was like, all right. Now, they didn't, you know, push it through, but I think they were just like standard no to everyone. And then, you know, we'll figure out who's actually hurting us. But it gets in your mindset that like you owe a company all your time and you don't. And with all this technology and obsession with our phones and just checking Slack all the time, we are giving so much to the companies we work for that I think it is good to make sure that you have other hobbies and other things that, you know, can keep you balanced.
Yeah. Well, and everybody has to decide what balance looks like for them. And you mentioned, thought it was interesting that you've helped a couple of folks to think like this and mm-hmm. actually branch out. Have you had individuals that struggled with this, that struggled with maybe the side hustle takes over too much and you've had to kind of pull them back? Like, have you had that experience where you've seen people struggle to do things outside of their W-2, or maybe their performance does start to dip? I know people are thinking it, so we might as well talk about it.
Honestly, no, or I don't know, right? Yeah, right. Sometimes when people underperform, I don't know the ins and outs of what might be going on in their personal life, maybe. I've had a couple suspicions sometimes that people were moonlighting or having like maybe two jobs, but it really comes down to me is like, I don't really care why, right? Like, you might be underperforming because you're stretching yourself thin, or because really this isn't your priority, or whatever it might be. It might also be because you're just not in a good headspace, et cetera. If you as an employer can just be really frank with somebody about where their standing is in the organization, and I think that's really important. A lot of people give feedback and a lot of people give reviews, but like, can you tell somebody you are underperforming or you are overperforming, or you are performing just fine. Like, just blankly tell them, where do you stand? I think if you have those frank conversations and you say, hey, you're currently underperforming, it allows that person to either open up about something that's going on in their life so we can support you, or maybe get their, you know, priorities straight, or figure out like, maybe these other things are taking a little bit over. And if it doesn't, you know, fix over time and there's not a good reason, then, you know, I let them go and it is what it is. So it's not for me to assess that, I guess, is my stance.
Which I think is the right one. And you also mentioned something that I think is interesting, is this idea of overperformance. I think most people would say that the reward for overperformance is more work and taking on more. And when you mentioned that you've had employees, you know, where it's either underperformance, sure, that's easy to tackle. I actually think overperformance can also be difficult to tackle. It's how do you take care of overperformers in your organization? How do you right size their work? How do you make sure that you don't disincentivize people from being too balanced? And Jim, you know, like, is there a way there where you've kind of found a way to support folks in their amazingness without accidentally falling into that crutch of like, you did great, now you're going to take on more?
Totally. So I'm in a unique business because we do think about time a lot, right? We're consulting and like a lot of our projects are hours. And so it's overworking is like, it happens, but it's really visible because all of a sudden somebody's logged 50 hours in 1 week and I'm going, okay, well, it's hard to log 50 hours. So they might've even worked 55. That's not good. And so it's really apparent to us when that's happening. As you become more senior and better, there's kind of two things. You could do harder work for us. Like, it could be more challenging work. That does mean that we should be billing you at a higher rate and you should be making more money. Like, the economics are pretty obvious.
If you want to get more. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't want it to be work more. I think we have a pretty good, and it comes up in our surveys, like work-life balance from a time perspective, we're pretty good about. Stress is different. You could have a stressful customer. You could have a stressful project. And that does not always equate more hours. I think we've all been there where we're like really stressed about a call. Or you could be staring at your screen for a while because you're stressed about the work. Like, that's not just time. That's, you know, are you supported in that role? Are you in the right seniority? Like, are you capable of that? Do you need a mentor to push you through? And so I think we watch for that. We make sure nobody's on more than three customers at a time, that they've got a balance between the ones that we know are pretty good and the ones that are a little harder. And you figure that out. But if somebody's overperforming, I don't want to give them more work. I want to give them different work. And I want to pay them more because they're making more impact.
Oh, that was a beautiful answer. Somebody's overperforming. I don't want to give them more work. I want to give them different work.
And I want my senior people to have bandwidth, not my junior people. Like, I want my junior people busy. They got to learn. They need hands-on. Like, I remember when I first started my career, I wanted more and more hours. I was one of the highest. I think I was like number two biller at the company. Like, I was just like, give me more. Like, I know what people are looking for. I know they're looking for the person that's like billing the most hours. Like, I want the CEO to know who I am. And so for me, it was that. And you're getting at bats, right? All the time. If my junior people have bandwidth, there's not a lot I can do with them. I can't give them a challenge to go figure out. If my senior people have bandwidth, I could say, hey, we are having some onboarding problems. Can you like go interview three customers, figure it out, come back with ideas? And they're senior enough that I know they could just run with it. That's where I want my bandwidth. So delegation, I would say, is one of the best skills to have as a senior leader. And it's actually a very senior skill set. You do not see junior people with an ability to delegate, and you stand out pretty quickly because you will demotivate senior people that do tactical work. Even if it's not your fault as a leader, it's just like they won't hand off. It's because it's a skill and they need to learn to give away and they need to learn how to do it where you're prescriptive and not micromanagey. Like, it's just, I probably have only learned that in the last 3 years, truly, to just be like, yeah. I know how to like hand this work off.
Well, in the last 3 years, that's you stepping into the CEO role, right? Totally. I mean, and that's, so when you first started at GoNimbly, I mean, director of marketing, stack partner. And then next thing you know, there were some years in between there. But moving up into that, tell us a little bit about that evolution for you. Was that a goal always? Was that where you wound up? How did you find yourself? We'll say shattering the ceiling.
Totally. Oh, I shattered that ceiling. Okay. So it's a little bit of a mix of both. I would say, okay, so here's how I started out. I started out as a consultant at Blue Wolf, did really well, got to senior consultant really quickly, wanted that next thing. It wasn't available to me. And I got lucky that a friend of mine was already working with Twilio and they needed my skill set. I had a depth in like marketing automation and like handoff to sales and Salesforce and like that integration piece. And Twilio was having a big problem with their like Eloqua instance. It was messy. Their speed to lead was a mess. And so they hired me to do it. And I had the forethought of being like, okay, I'm going to quit my job for this. Can you give me a 3-month contract? And they were like, sure. And they gave me a 3-month contract. I was making more money than I was before at 30 hours a week. And I thought that I was like, I think I want to start a business. So I cried over LLC documents and figuring out quarterly taxes. And it was like, I was in tears all the time. I was like, I don't get it. It was so frustrating. It was so hard. But figured it out, got my first $20,000 check. I remember like taking a picture of it because my dad was really nervous about me starting my own business. He had done it and failed. It's why we moved from Spain to the US when I was a kid, is because my dad's business failed. So he was very scared. He's an entrepreneur that like had it taken out of him by, you know, losing his business. So he was really scared. And I remember taking a picture with the check and being like, Dad, look, it wasn't a bad idea. Like, I'm making money. And also all I needed was a laptop. He was different. He was an engineer that was like building irrigation systems. So he was harder. Yeah. But then, you know, it starts to move forward. And my second customer was Zendesk. So like all of a sudden I had Twilio and Zendesk, like, and they're still with us today. And at that point I had my own, I was basically a glorified contractor. It was me and a couple of friends that I was like, can you give me some time? And I called it Divided Sky because it's a Fish song. I'm a big Fish fan. So I had my own little, it's not on my LinkedIn because it didn't last long. Uh-huh. And then I had a few friends that at the same time started GoNimbly. And they were also at Twilio, but they were doing sales operations work. And I got a call that was like, hey, we want to do the work that you're doing. So like, do you want to just do it with us? And what they didn't know is I was terribly lonely. I told you I was crying all the time. I was just like, every client escalation, every issue, how do I send an invoice? Like all of the, you know, contractor issues, how do I pay contractor like taxes? How do I give people W-9s? Like everything felt hard. And so after like, I think I was doing that for like 6-9 months on my own. And then it was like, why don't we just like blend together? And so what I was doing is running the marketing automation side of the business. So I was like, okay, great. I can go expand all of your customers, bring them what I can do, and we can go from there. And pretty quickly, I was kind of running the entire delivery team. And so it was like, hey, how about you'll give me that title? And that's when I got chief services officer. And at that time is when I negotiated to be an equal partner too. Because I just wasn't very good at the math. Honestly, I did not realize the value that I brought with a Twilio and Zendesk recurring contract. I just didn't know. I like honestly felt like I wasn't worth that much. I didn't really know how to look at their books. I didn't know how to ask, hey, can I look at your books? I didn't realize that I was actually a pretty big portion of the revenue and I was really profitable. I didn't realize that that was good. Like, I just didn't know. I saw them. There were three men. I saw them and I was like, wow. And they had invested in their brand and the website looked good. And I was like, wow, they're really big. And then I was like, oh, maybe not so. And I was a big fuel. I was very lucky though that they pretty quickly were like, we want to make you an equal partner. Not a problem. Here's the paperwork. So I didn't have to do, I was actually ready with a whole pitch and they were like, yep, makes sense. And I didn't even go through my PowerPoint, you know, like it was, you know, it's one of those like things where all you got to do is ask.
It's hard. It's hard when you don't realize what you have and no one's going to tell you, right? No one's going to say, hey, by the way, you're like the most valuable person here. I mean, we should change that.
Totally.
But so, okay. So suddenly you don't even have to do your PowerPoint and you're realizing I'm at the table. I have a seat at the table.
Yeah. And then honestly, the way that I got CEO was, I think I was doing a big portion of the job, but the last CEO was ready to move on. So it was hairy. Like a couple people wanted the gig and there was a bit of back and forth. I was lucky that my business partner, Troy, was like pretty adamant. He's like, I don't want to do this without you. You're it. And like, he really advocated for me. and, you know, a couple board meetings later and a bunch of paperwork and all that. And I was doing the job in the middle of a pandemic with a great resignation and going through a divorce. So that was fun.
A couple of easy things. Yeah. Anybody can navigate. Mm-hmm. You're doing all at once.
Easy
peasy. But it is incredible because you're doing all of those things. You're having these professional challenges. You're having these personal challenges. What I just keep hearing are stories of somebody who's having to learn how to do a thing for the first time and figuring it out on your own. And you have this element of figure it outiveness, mm-hmm. where you're able to do that and emulate and teach other people. And now, I mean, you've been, same from the outset, you've been unbelievably successful in this CEO role. And you're delivering such needed service, because that's the other thing, is it's one thing. I think everybody right now is wanting to try their hand at consulting, right? They're saying that 2024 is going to be the year of fractional work. And you're kind of 10 years ahead of this. And so when you were thinking of where you're going to plant and you're going to land and your kind of zone of genius, you sort of landed in this operations mm-hmm. space. And I think other people are now catching on to that.
Yeah.
What made you decide to settle there? Like, why for you was, why was this the consulting for you?
Yeah. Well, first thing I'll say is if you're thinking about going fractional, just do it. Especially if you can just negotiate 3 to 6 months of a commitment from one company, because then you can go and find another job afterwards. Like, you can ask them at the 3 month mark, how's it going? Are we going to renew? And you can go from there. It's a nice stint. It's good networking. I think in consulting, you get to work with multiple companies and multiple people. My network's amazing. And it's because I didn't stay at one company forever, even though it looks that way. I actually worked with a lot of different companies at once. So I think that if you're trying to do it, there is a decision you're going to have to make. I want to do a one-woman shop and just work consulting on the side? It gives me flexibility. I do projects. It's a lot of selling. You're going to be selling all the time and selling your services all the time. There's some overhead. You'll figure it out. Year one will suck. That's great. Or do you want to build a business? And then, just so you know, you will not make that much money in the first few years, because you're going to be incurring a lot of costs. You're going to be delegating. You're going to be bringing people on. Every time you hire someone, they're ineffective for a month. It costs you their salary. And so you'll have to figure out your path. If you want to go, you know, personal, then, you know, get yourself contracts that are long-term, so you're not selling all the time. If you're building, you know, a business, you'll just know that you're not going to be printing money in the early days. I was actually making more profit on my own than I am today.
Well, and that's, you know, I can get into the minds of some of our listeners, because I know. And I think the how is the difficult piece here, because there's so many brilliant people that I think can consult and can do fractional work. But it's still a little bit difficult to figure out, how do I go about securing that first customer? How do I put myself out there? So, I mean, and maybe there's no one way to do that, but if you know, speaking to the people right now who maybe have been laid off, or they're working at a toxic organization, or they want to do more for themselves, or they have the energy that you spoke about to bet on themselves versus anybody else, what do you think are the first 2 to 3 things they should do to go and secure that first piece of business?
Go make a list of all your champions. The people that love you, that know how good you are, that can vouch for you, and just first say, I want to do X. Put it out there. If you've been laid off and you don't have a job, just post on LinkedIn. Hey, I'm really good at this, this, and this. I'm looking for my next gig. Can you intro me to someone, you know, that this might be helpful? Like, it is like vulnerable to just put it out there. But I recently put on LinkedIn, I want to be part of more boards. I want to be part of an advisory board. And I got 3 pings in one of them, and I got a seat on their advisory board. And it took asking and it took posting it. And I had been thinking about it for like 2 years. So I think that's the biggest thing, is you can't do it alone, right? Like, you can't just find a client. And I think if you're just one person and what you're looking for is one contract, you don't have to create a machine. You don't even need a website. You need a reference. You need a referral. And I think the way that I would do it is I would ping the 10, 15 people that I know. I would have my little like forwardable email that I would say, hey, here's what I'm really great at, what I'm looking for. Go figure out your rate so that you're not getting caught in a moment where you're like, I don't know how much I'm worth. And that's the easiest way to land one client. After that, if you're trying to build a business, you're going to have to do a whole lot more.
Yeah. And that's going to bring me to another question that might be a little bit difficult to answer. But considering, you just throw you a hardball, maybe.
Yeah, please.
I know, you're probably going to cry. It's difficult to not only pitch yourself, but have to pitch against others. Mm. And I think the more fractional folks or consultants or advisors that enter into the marketplace, especially if you think about B2B or B2B SaaS, right? There's not room for everybody to be an advisor or be a consultant. And so how do you gracefully elevate yourself, but also pitch against somebody else who's trying to do the same thing?
Well, I think one, it takes knowing your differentiator. So a lot of the times I'll even say, don't hire me if, and I'll like paint the scenario of like the stuff that I'm not great at or like what they should go to somebody else with. And so you can really leverage like painting yourself as, hey, I'm really great at these things. You can count on me for X. Having references, right? Being referred, I think, is a huge one. If you're trying to bid for a fractional, they're not going to give you the names of the other three people. So it's not like you can go do an analysis and say, well, they had less experience here or XYZ here. But I think just being really solid and saying, hey, your challenges were 1, 2, 3. I'm bringing this experience, this depth, and, you know, the three things I would say about me are I'm accountable, I'm curious, I'm innovative, I can motivate teams. If that's what you need, you know, I'm here. So, you know, I think it's the confidence in saying what you're great at and being really open. I think a lot of people buying services is hard. Okay. So buying services or fractional services, there is so much trust. You cannot do a demo. You can show past projects, but like, it's not the same. They have to trust you. There's a really great book called Managing a Professional Services Firm. It's as riveting as the title. It is dry, but it's to the point. And it talks about how somebody buying services feels. And they're not happy. They're not excited about a tool. They're not buying a car and they're pumped about it. They're scared or they're underwater or they're anxious because they're either hiring you because they are not doing a good job and like they can't figure it out, or because the company's not doing well and there's a lot of scrutiny, or because it's a project that like they don't have the expertise for, so they're nervous and they don't even really know how to ask questions about it. And so you just have to really think about like the way that your buyer is consuming you. So I do a lot of like, if I were in your shoes, I would do X. And like, you're probably considering this and this. This is why I would choose my approach. So like, help them choose you, because they're also not comparing. They're comparing apples and oranges. They're comparing you with a full-time hire with a firm. And they can't put that in a spreadsheet and compare. They have to really feel like they're in good hands.
Well, I can imagine, especially in the work that you do, where you're dealing with business ops and revenue ops and all of those things, you likely have to find some way to respectfully call their kids ugly, because it's something that you need to go in and fix. And you might be talking and selling your services to the person that built the spreadsheet, that broke everything, right? So like, yeah, have you found yourself in a position where you're kind of having to say like, yeah, your kid, that's your kid. That's your personal child. Yeah. Your child's a little weird looking. I'm going to come in and fix them. That's difficult too, right?
But he's sweet, you know, and he's
so
smart.
He's good intentions.
So yes. And I actually think I've lost deals early on because I've been too blunt about like, oh boy, this, you know, and that doesn't feel good. The person setting it up was doing their best. And so I think this is like the improv kind of yes and. Oh, I can see why you built that way, but your team's gotten double the size now. I'm assuming it's breaking. Or, oh yeah, like one thing that I learned through trial and error was blank. Like, you have to give that person the empathy that they most likely they were put in a position where they were just told to do it and to stretch and to give it a shot because the company didn't have any other alternative. And honestly, sometimes that's the right thing. I have maybe an unpopular opinion. Startups don't need to build for scale. You know, you need to hack it. You need to move fast. You need to figure out a bunch of plays. People got to get on the phone, and I don't care if it's in a spreadsheet. So you should get, as an operator going into like somebody that has an inflection point, like doubling the size of their sales team or hiring their first sales rep, et cetera, they should have a mess for you to clean up because they weren't building for that point. So I think it's just like bringing that empathy and bringing that understanding that it's good. The reason you're coming to me is because you're about to run a different kind of business. So let's build a different kind of infrastructure.
Okay. That was a little bit of a masterclass right there. And I love I love your hot take of you don't have to build everything initially for scale. You don't have to build the MVP or the skateboard, as some people say. Like, yeah, it's going to get you far enough. And it's okay to acknowledge, I'm going to build a thing that's going to get me from here to there, that's likely going to break. Yep. And it sounds like the advice there is know when that thing isn't going to work anymore.
Yep.
Put down your ego about that, and then go to people who know how to take the thing from here and get it there, and then involve them. It's,
absolutely,
it's a beautiful way to think about building.
Yeah. And it's also knowing what you're great at. So again, if it's like you pitching yourself, are you someone that's really great in the startup space? Are you someone mm-hmm. that's really good to bring people? Like, we're the scale people. We over-engineer. Like, if you come to me as a startup and you want me to build in production and you want me to hack it and you want me to make changes live, like, I teach my entire team not to do that. So it's very hard for people to be like, I could just do that. And so you find a bit of a balance, but like, know where you play and know what you can provide for that, because there are three types of consulting. There is gray hair, brain work, and then like tactical. And brain work is what you think of with a McKinsey's, right? Big, hairy problem. No one's dealt with it before, legislation or like a big cultural thing. And you hire all these super smart people to come in and fix a problem that's like very unique. You've got your gray hair work, which is where we sit, which is we've seen it before. So you're hiring us because we've done it 10 other times, because we've taken, you know, all these amazing companies to IPO. So we know what that looks like, or because we've seen companies scale this way. And so that's the gray hair. That's the, like, I've seen it before. And then there's the tactical work, which is like, oh, you have a lot of execution. Think about, like, I don't know, you do a webinar every day, you're going to outsource the execution of that webinar. So like, they're just giving you hands on keyboard. The work is not hard. It's not even ambiguous, or you could do it yourself, but you're going to outsource that. Your consulting is going to fall into one of those three categories typically. And you want to know which one you want to do. It will sometimes be all three, but you should have a primary. And if it's brain work, if it's like, give me something hairy that you haven't seen, I'm very good at problem solving, awesome. If it's gray hair, then like, double down on, I've seen this before. I've got a playbook. And then if it's tactical, you're probably not wanting to do that work because it doesn't pay well. But sure, you could just churn stuff out.
All of that was just on the tip of your tongue, by the way. That was unbelievable.
From these dumb professional services books I read.
All these books all these dry books that are amazing. And I feel like you and I could talk about these dry things all day, but it is bringing us to our rapid reveal section.
Lovely.
Where you have 60 seconds or less to answer each of these. And I just feel like, because of what I know of you, they're going to be good. And I can't wait. So are you down for the rapid reveal section?
Yeah.
Let's do it. All right. Question number one. What is the last great dream that you had?
Okay. It's not super great, but I've never done it before. I want to get on a game show.
Oh, with any particular game show?
Honestly, I would do any of them. Floor is Lava, I would suck at, but it would be so funny. $100,000 Pyramid. I would do that one. I love that. I grew up like watching game shows with my mom, and we used to love that one. But I would honestly, Squid Games, like, I don't care. I just want to be on a game show.
The Netflix version, not the actual
yes.
version.
People yes. Really. The Netflix, please. Yep.
Yeah.
I'd
yeah,
be
yeah,
a villain yeah. so fast, though.
Yeah. Well, I think about going on Family Feud with my family. Now they're always, they're always so supportive of each other. My family would not be like that.
No, you idiot.
I'd be like, that was a dumb answer. What are you talking? Like, we would not be. We would break it. And that's kind of why I want to do it. Because that's how real families operate.
I love that.
Wonderful. You want to be in a game show. Yes. Okay. Number two, what's an irrational fear of yours?
So I have more of like I'm going to A to B this question. It's more about a thing I had to kind of get over. I used to be really self-conscious about the word entrepreneur. I thought entrepreneur was like a very male word. You know, I would think of Steve Jobs or like, Bill Gates, and you had to start your business in a garage and it had to become $1 billion, right? Like, that's what I figured when I thought of entrepreneurs. And I didn't realize that I had been an entrepreneur since I was a kid. Like, I was the one begging my parents to put lemonade stands out. And I had a little jewelry company. I call it little, but like, I was selling into a few different stores all through college. It's how I made money. And I started clubs in every, school and university. And I've started like more than this, but like two very successful businesses. Like, my game company makes like 20 grand a week selling games. And that's my side hustle. And I'm like starting to be a little bit more comfortable by saying like, I am an entrepreneur. Like I like to start things, and it doesn't have to be the Amazon story to feel like confident saying that.
No. And if you want to go work in a garage one day, I feel like you could do that.
I live in Brooklyn.
Find someone's garage and work in it. Or a turtleneck and like tiny little spectacles and then you're there. Number three, what is the best gift you've ever given someone?
Okay, I gave a gift to my mom and a gift to my dad. So for my mom's 50th birthday, I printed out a bunch of different birthday cards, like custom ones with her face and stuff on it. And I shipped it to everyone she loves with like return addresses. So when she turned 50, she got cards sent home like every day. And from all the people that she loved, like all her nieces and nephews and sisters and everything. And so she got like almost 100 birthday cards for her birthday.
Okay. See,
cute, right?
like unbelievably cute. Of course, you had a great answer to that. I knew it.
I was very
proud
of that.
You have great answers to so many things. You're an unbelievable wealth of knowledge. You are a kind person who's running a phenomenal business that is absolutely changing the way.
Oh, Christina, stop. I'm going to cry.
You do it. You cry right here. But if people want to connect with you and learn more about you, learn more about Go Nimbly, have their organization fundamentally shifted for the better, how do they find you? How do they connect with you?
Amazing. Well, I'm super active on LinkedIn. So like, that's probably the easiest thing. Hit me up on LinkedIn, jen@gonimbly.com if you want to get into my email, and then gonimbly.com for our website. And then if you want to buy a game, you can go to pillboxgames.com and you can use promo code I know Jen, and you can get $4.69 off, because that's funny. And that's what we did.
See, look at the value. It's amazing.
Everybody gets $5 today.
Everybody is getting money back in their pocket and entertainment. And that is priceless. Jen, thank you so much for being on the show. You're as wonderful as you've always been, and we appreciate you.
Thank you.
And that is all, folks.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Taking the Lead. If you're looking for more inspiring stories from women leaders in B2B tech, then visit us at motionagency.io/takingthelead.